Behind the scenes, I mean, as you say, it was an explosive time a number of weeks ago when he had those arrests in Zurich. I think on the 27th of May, when the FBI descended on one of Zurich's swankiest hotels, which of course is where the FIFA higher-ups would be staying, they always do, and they arrested some of their, well, most of their senior officials, and many of whom are still under lock and key. Some have already been extradited to the United States. Basically, the
whole... How many have been extradited now?
I think there's two or three being extradited, and the rest are still under lock and key in Zurich, in Switzerland.
The Swiss have always been quite touchy about extradition.
Of course,
but do you think those arrested will eventually be extradited?
They will be extradited because, I mean, you know, it's the old story, the old Watergate story, follow the money, which is exactly what the FBI and the US Department of Justice and the Inland Revenue Service have been doing. And now, with the cooperation of the Swiss authorities, which, as you say, is quite unusual. They've been quite secretive about how they deal with their own financial affairs. But now that the Swiss authorities are also on the case, it's going to be very difficult, I think, for those senior FIFA officials to hide much longer from the long arm of the law. And because they laundered much of their money through the US financial system, that's exactly why they've been vulnerable and why they're up for extradition to the States.
So that's why they're up for extradition, but they are also up for possible prosecution in Switzerland?
Yes, I think so, as well in Switzerland, because the Swiss have come on board a bit late, in my view. I mean, myself and my colleague Alan Thompson, who've written three or more books on the whole FIFA thing, and many of which have been investigated. And what I'm going to be arguing this evening at a presentation at the UTS around the corner is actually those books, particularly the last one, Badfellas, became a ticking time bomb beneath the basement of FIFA House. They actually, if you like, set out the route map and put up the signposts for the other investigations to follow. Because if I start to read the charge sheets that I was sent by the US Department of Justice, some of the wording could have come straight out the pages of Badfellas, which is the book that Alan and I published. And it came out in 2003, we were exasperated, frustrated and astonished because all the things that have come out now were all in there. So we put it in the public domain, but nothing happened. But of course, what we didn't realise, and now we do realise, it was a slow ticking bomb, which, you know, went off with spectacular effect on the 27th of May.
When you write a book called Badfellas, you're making a fairly obvious reference to the film Goodfellas,
that's right,
which is about the mafia. You're really saying that FIFA operated like a mafia.
Well, it was, because Alan and I, we started with a kind of a historical and organisational analysis, but the closer we got to the self-style, as they call themselves, the FIFA family, the closer we got to that family as we burrowed within, if you like, the entrails of the organisation, we realised they operated more like a mafia family than, if you like, an honest sporting body. And so that's why we selected the term Badfellas as a deliberate inversion.
So what are the parallels? For instance, lot of not paying any tax.
Yeah, well, lots of corrupt under the table deals. Well, you've seen it all coming out, particularly with, you know, the lots of the charges are to do with the selling of television and marketing and media rights, and a lot of the people who are in the frame to be charged are not just the FIFA officials, but senior corporate officials in media marketing companies, because that's where a lot of the financial deals were done.
But one thing that they have that the mafia have never had and would probably envy is an almost diplomatic status. They behave almost like a quasi-state.
Exactly.
They're able to move around the world without necessarily obeying all the laws and, in fact, sometimes overriding the laws of the countries in which they land.
That's right. It's because they operate, as you say, almost like an offshore state with not the same kind of constraints that other organisations have to operate under. And because they have this precious commodity, which they believe is at their disposal, the world's most popular game by far, you know, the individual nations and individual rulers are quite happy to kowtow to the likes of Sepp Blatter and those that came before him, Yao Avalanche, and treat them like royalty. And, you know, this is why they've been able to operate without the same constraints as even the mafia. Although it's interesting to see that the FBI or the team of investigators they put on the FIFA case have been equivalent, if not in excess, of the guys they put on the serious racketeers in the American Mafia. So they've treated it exactly the same. And in fact, in September this year, there's a museum in Las Vegas called the Mob Hall of Fame, which, you know, like the Americans love their sporting Hall of Fame, so they've got a Mob Hall of Fame in Vegas. And in September, the FIFA exhibit opens, entitled The Ugly Game, which is a game, an inversion of what's often referred to as the beautiful game. But of course, under Blatter's tutelage, football's been turned into the ugly game.
So Zep Blatter will be in Las Vegas's Mob Hall of Fame.
Well, we'll see. Interesting. The one of the remaining questions to be answered is, will Sepp Blatter eventually himself end up behind bars? And my sort of answer to my own question is, it depends what happens when those that have been extradited already realise the seriousness of the charges and face the prospect of the rest of their lives behind bars in an orange boiler suit in Sing Sing in New York State's federal penitentiary.
So it depends on whether people roll over, as
they've already started to roll over. I mean, the whole case it really was broken open by one of the officials, Chuck Blazer, who persuaded to wear a wire by the Inland Revenue Service. And
is the man who famously had two apartments, one for himself and one for his animals.
Well, if you ever met him, he's a huge man. And you literally, if he was only in one apartment, you definitely couldn't swing a cat around. So he probably had to have a second apartment for those. But he basically turned Queen's evidence very early because he could see the charges he was looking at. And again, he isn't a man who would rather live in at some tower than on Devil's Island or the equivalent state penitentiary.
So he agreed to have a microphone on his key ring.
He did. So during the FIFA meetings in around the times of the Olympics in London in 2012, and that's really what started the whole investigation. But also many of the other top FIFA executives, I've basically said Jack Warner amongst them, Jeffrey Webb, who were all looking at the charge sheets thinking, I'm not going to take this rap. I'm going to start to sing. If this can buy me some time on my sentence, otherwise they're going to die in prison.
Haven't Jack Warner's own sons already started to roll over on him? Yep. I've seen that reported.
That's right. But, you know, again, these are very serious charges. And again, a lot of these guys aren't young men and they will spend the rest of their lives behind bars. Whether Blatter joins them or not will be very interesting.
Now, you described it as operating like an offshore state. But an offshore state would be offshore, and this one was really based in Switzerland. How much of this is about Switzerland? How much is Switzerland's fault, its banking laws and so on?
I think that there is an issue with Switzerland. Lots of big governing bodies of sport, you'll find their headquarters in Switzerland, or places like Switzerland, which have a kind of an offshore status in terms of their financial regulations. So I think the International Olympic Committee, their headquarters in Zurich or in Switzerland, in Neon, I think. So in other words, it's not a surprise.
So what are the advantages there? I mean, was it the secrecy of bank accounts, which is now slowly dissolving?
It certainly was initially, and that held steadfast for a long time because, you know, there's been a number of investigations into FIFA, and, you know, not just myself and Alan Tomlinson's books, but Andrew Jennings' books and work for the BBC's Panorama programme. It's all been laid bare. But what's kept it secret is that the Swiss authorities have refused to act.
And also, it's been raised with FIFA so many times and they've been able to deflect it for so long. Whose fault is that? Has the sporting media been partly to blame?
I think so, yes, because, again, it's because it is, you know, the world's most popular and most financially generative game. And so for those sorts of reasons, they've gotten away with murder.
And what happens if... What would happen if FIFA came tumbling down? People say it would be a disaster because, for all its faults, FIFA has done an enormous amount to develop football and associated social benefits in the third world.
Well, that's right. I think that's one of the... It was a very clever card that Blatter played, to A, to gain power, and B, to stay in power, which to, if you like, advertise himself as the champion of the developing world, when, you know, basically taking money from the rich and greedy Europeans and spreading it around the rest of the world and helping nations develop. And there's some merit in that strategy. But actually, at the heart of it is Blatter knew and knows, as did his mentor before him, Avalanche, in order for him to get power and stay in power, he had to cultivate the votes of the smaller countries. Because the smaller countries in FIFA, shamocracy, as I call it, the votes of the smaller countries are worth exactly the same of the votes of the much larger, more established, larger European country. So, of course, you know, Blatter very carefully portrayed himself as a champion of the if you like, developing world, and FIFA, not him particularly, but FIFA in general, has done some good development work. So whatever happens next in the reform and the rebuilding of FIFA, it has to take account of the development narrative, but do it genuinely and properly for the good of the developing world, rather from the vainglorious power appetites of leaders like Blatter.
So what is the prescription then? If it is a shamocracy, how would you turn it into a proper democracy and turn it into an organisation that you could respect?
It's not easy, that's for sure. For a while I was thinking about this, and I was thinking, you know, to bring it maybe within the embrace of the United Nations, or a dimension of the United Nations, such as, say, UNESCO, the United Nations Educational, Cultural and Scientific, because then at least there is a semblance of democratic accountability. The problem with that, of course, is not all nation states are members of FIFA, and vice versa. Not all countries are members of the United Nations. I'll give you a classic example, England. England aren't a member of the United Nations. The United Kingdom, the nation state, is.
Oh, so, I see what you mean.
So in other words, you've got, controversially, you have Palestine, which is a member of FIFA, but has not been admitted to the United Nations. So, the formula of taking FIFA and putting it within, if you like, the orbit of the United Nations, it almost falls down before you start because of those organisational differences.
So what other alternatives have you thought about?
Well, I think it needs to be reformed by an independent body. The idea that FIFA itself, particularly under the current regime, which is disintegrated, can come up with a formula for reform is ludicrous. Because, as we all know, you know, it's a cliche. Because it is, turkeys don't vote for Christmas. So, you know, it's unlikely that those who've been benefiting most from FIFA's rancid and corrupt regime will vote for any significant changes. So what we need is an independent commission, and this is what's been actually now the pressure's coming from the corporate sponsors for exactly this, you know, the Coca-Cola, Visa and these sorts of organisations whose own brands have been tarnished by the way FIFA's been operated, saying we need to have an independent commission to discuss and come up with a formula which will lead to the reform of FIFA, which accounts for many of the things we've been talking about, particularly, if you like, the development narrative, which has been hijacked before by Blatter.
Has Australia been complacent in all of this?
I think Australia, like England, have been naive in this, you know, because Australia was one of the bidders for 2018 and 22 World Cups, as were England. And I don't think Australia, like England, or they should have known better, knew quite what they were coming up against when they, you know, went to bat with FIFA, because FIFA was a corrupt regime. And again, it was all out in the public domain. But it's one of those situations. How do you win a corrupt game? You become more corrupt than everybody else. And I think for Australia, to its credit, and England to their credit as well, just refused to go that way. And even though their bids were amongst the strongest for those competitions, you know, that was never going to count. How good your facilities were, how many you had, how many people played the game, was going to make no difference, because we all knew in the background there were crooked deals being done under the table that you were never going to beat.
And what should Australia do now?
Well, I think that Australia should sit back and should certainly contribute to the debate about the reformation of FIFA. I'll be interested this evening at the debate to hear what Benita Mercedes has to say about this, because she was key in Australia's bid and was also a key whistleblower is the wrong word. But anyway, she took a stance against FIFA because of what she'd experienced in her dealing with those. So I think Australia, you know, is a country that could and should definitely host a competition like the World Cup. But until the House of FIFA is reformed and cleaned up, I'm not so sure it would be such a good, comfortable place to go to bed with.
And Qatar, what's that going to be like? Well, is it inevitable, first question?
Well, it's difficult. I mean, I've gone on record elsewhere saying the decision to give hosting rights to the World Cup to Qatar in 2022 is the worst history in the governance, world governance of sport in modern sport, in modern times. There's no doubt about that. What a ludicrous thing to do, to take the World Cup, you know, particularly in the traditional time of year that's played, into a country with no tradition of football, no facilities of any real description, and with searing heat and temperatures when the game can't be played. It was absolutely ludicrous. The problem that we've got at the moment, both with Qatar and to a less but similar extent with the 2018 World Cup in Russia, there's no doubt in my mind that both of these both of those bids were rigged and were corrupt.
But they'll both go ahead.
Well, both, because there's a moral debate, there's a legal debate, and then there's a practical debate.
There are people agitating for Qatar to have it removed. It's not going to happen, though.
Oh well, who knows? I don't know. I think it could be removed and possibly should be removed. And if so, there are people such as, for instance, Australians, who are capable of hosting the World Cup, because you know you have the facilities. You know, you wouldn't have to start building. You know, but then you would have to raise questions about the amount of, if you like, Nepalese workers who've died constructing the stadium in Doha and Qatar, which is, you know, scandal upon another scandal. So there are places where it could be hosted. It could be hosted. I wouldn't like to see England put their hat in the ring for this, because again, you know, it begins to look a bit like sour grapes. England could definitely host it because we have the facilities, we have the culture, we've got all the rest of the stuff. You know, the United States could definitely host it. There are countries all over the world who could host it.
But barring any unforeseen circumstances, Moscow will definitely go ahead.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Although the latest noise out was that the draw was made last week, and to pile ludicrousness on ludicrousness, Vladimir Putin at that ceremony suggested that Sepp Blatter should be awarded the Nobel Peace Prize, which is almost as ludicrous as saying that Vladimir Putin should be awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. But although I'm sure Blatter will be thwarted if he had that as an ambition, because the Nobel Peace Prize Committee only a few days ago announced that as soon as possible they were severing all relationships with FIFA as an organisation.